I would like to formally introduce the audience, our Dr. Shailesh Kumar. Dr. Shailesh Kumar is presently the Chief Data Scientist at the Center of Excellence in AI/ML at Reliance Jio. Dr. Kumar holds a Master's and PhD in AI from the University of Texas at Austin as one of the top data scientists and renowned AI experts of India. Dr. Shailesh has also worked as a distinguished data scientist at Ola, as a researcher in the Google Brain team, and senior scientist at Yahoo Labs, principal development at Microsoft, and also chief scientist and co-founder of Thirdly, an edtech startup. Dr. Kumar has 18 years of experience in building AI solutions in a variety of domains, including web, retail, finance, remote sensing, fleet management, computer vision, knowledge graph, and conversational computing. He has published over 20 international papers and book chapters and holds more than 20 patents in AI/ML. He was recognized as one of the top 10 data scientists in India in 2015 by Analytics India magazine. Dr. Kumar's current work explores reimagining education, agriculture, healthcare, mobility, energy, environment, safety, and security in the age of digital connectivity and AI. Today, Dr. Shailesh Kumar would be enlightening the audience on ecosystem thinking, the next evolution of AI. May I now request Dr. Shailesh Kumar to kindly deliver
this
talk.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. And, you know, it's a great honor to be speaking to all of you. We are obviously all very proud of our armed forces. And so this is a great honor. And what I'm going to talk about is some of my learnings over the last 20 years of how to think about AI in general in any domain. And, you know, what are some of the building blocks of AI in how do we kind of go and build all the way from component level AI to ecosystem level AI? And that journey I will walk you through a series of what I call paradigm shifts. So let me go through a couple of these paradigm shifts through this talk. So the first paradigm shift that I want all of us to understand is this idea of convergence of technologies. So today we are living in a very special time that we have many different technologies that have come together on their own, but they are all together is what makes this a very interesting time. So we have the internet, we have the connectivity, we have devices, we have cloud computing, we have AI/ML, and we have IoT, we have blockchain, we have 3D printing, we have AR, VR, and all that, right? So the idea is that there are many, many technologies that have independently evolved, and now they are all together is a very unique opportunity for all of us. Now, back in the 70s, the cloud computing was not there, connectivity was not there, devices were not as omnipresent, and AI was still there, but it was very, basic. So the fact that all of this is together is far more important to recognize than having, each one of them independently. So that is a very big paradigm shift that we all should be able to take advantage of. So now let me talk a little bit about the idea of technology itself and from a very basic sense, and then take us all through a journey of technology. So if you think about technology, right, this is a technology conference, technology is nothing but a way for us humans to extend ourselves into machines. So our own abilities to see, for example, we have created telescopes and microscopes. If we cannot see very far and very deep, right? If we think of our ability to speak very loudly, we have created, microphones and other things. If we want to look at our capability of walking and lifting things, we have created cranes and cars, if you will, right? So what humans have done in the last, since the birth of human civilization is this art of extending ourselves into machines. And that is a very unique thing about humans. And now, if you look at what is so unique about humans is not just our ability to run and walk and talk and lift and all that, but really our ability to think, our ability to learn, our ability to adapt, our ability to create, our ability to communicate with each other, right? So these are the things that make us very unique. And, AI is just that part of technology which makes us, extend these aspects of humans into us. And this is what the theme that we'll talk about today is. Now, if you look at technology, when we say technology is evolving, all facets of technology are evolving. Our tools are evolving. Our idea of computing is evolving. Our interfaces to machines are evolving. our sensors are evolving, and our you know, data and intelligence is also evolving. And with that, you know, the idea of products is evolving. So I'll talk about that. And the idea of what AI thinking is also evolving. So, you know, we are going to hear a lot of talks and, you know, about what AI is, but you will see an evolution in AI thinking also. What it we used to think about 5 years ago and what we think about now is evolving. And the data science skills are also evolving. What we need to learn as data scientists is also evolving. So let me go through quickly with some of these you know, technology evolutions to give a sense of, you know, we are just a frame in a very large movie called the human civilization. And, you know, if you think about the tools, since the birth of mankind, we have been building tools. These tools have become better and, you know, meaner, if you will. And now we have automated tools and robotics that can generate, you know, cars after cars or manufacturing or what have you, that can, you know, with complete automation and precision. Right? So our tools have evolved over the last so many centuries. Our sensors have evolved. If you think about the sensors like the Galileo telescope, today, you know, we can start reaches of galaxy. Now we can even send a telescope into space and see what is going on from another angle, which is not visible from Earth. Right? And in every domain, whether it is the defense domain, in the medical domain, whether it is the retail domain, education domain, healthcare, agriculture, every domain now, we have become what we call ourselves a sensor civilization. And sensor is a very important idea. And, you know, all of us use sensors of all kinds all the time, whether in our cell phones or in our warships, we have a plethora of sensors, right? And we are a sensor civilization. And because we are a sensor civilization, we have become a data civilization. And, you know, sensors can sense, you know, we have, humans have 5 senses. But if you look at the sensors in the medical world and the defense world and, you know, the heat sensors and the hyperspectral sensors and all kinds of sensors, we are a sensor civilization now. Now, you know, the sensor is not just a device, but anything that collects data is a sensor. And if you broaden that definition of a sensor, every time we buy a product or do a click or a tweet or a Facebook or any activity on any system, we are generating data. Even making a phone call, we generate data somewhere. So in a way, you know, everything that we do is logged, and we are therefore a sensor civilization. So both thinking sensor as a set of devices, but also thinking of sensors as a set of, you know, a philosophy of anything that creates data is a sensor. So we are a sensor civilization now. Our computing is evolving. You think about what computing used to be in the 70s to, you know, the 80s and 90s when we all grew up, and what it is now, you know, cloud computing. And they say that, you know, cloud is the real computer today. Our devices, our laptops, our phones are not really computers. They're just connectors to the real computer, which is where our data is stored, all our Gmail, all our LinkedIn, all our YouTube, all the, you know, enterprise data, all your defense data. This is all going to be stored in you know, cloud servers, and that is what the real computer is. And the terminal that we sit on is just a connector to that real computer, right? And it has a lot of benefits and other things we can see, right? So we can build planet scale products because we have cloud computing. So computing has evolved, tools have evolved, sensors have evolved. The idea of data also has evolved. So when we were doing our PhD 20 years ago, we used to think of data as an Excel spreadsheet with rows and columns, but now data has evolved quite a bit. Right? So the, for example, our, you know, we think of data not just as a rows and columns, but, you know, for example, gene sequence data. The Human Genome Project led to a lot of data, and now imagine billions of people around the world. If all of our genome is collected and analyzed, that's a huge amount of data that we can have. Right? Our satellite data, right? Whether it is an agriculture satellite, a weather satellite, or a defense satellite, these satellites are always roaming around and collecting data of various types, whether it is, where is the on the ocean, where is the good fish, where are the good minerals, what is the water level, what are the crops that are being grown. Every kind of thing we can now sense using the remote sensing data. So that's another kind of data. Another type of data is what we call transaction data. So every time we kind of swipe a card or buy something somewhere, we create data, right? The receipt that we get is really a log that creates somewhere. Or when we swipe a card, we know that this person swiped this card at this location for this amount at this time of day, right? And that log is created. So that is a large amount of data. The action data has been created. Every time we do something on the stock market, every time we write a book, all this data has been generated now, and we are now a very big data civilization, if you will. And internet has done wonders to this whole thing, and now the data has become 100x more than just what it was before, because every time we go online and do, every time we do search, every time we do a Facebook or a Twitter, we generate data. Right? So there's a lot of data being generated. And the next wave of data, again, 100x more than previous, is the IoT data. And you know, this is the data that I think all of us really need to understand. How is it different from the traditional transaction data? So I'll give you an example from the Ola world. If you think about, you know, taking a cab or, you know, taking a ride on a taxi, the whole event of opening the app, you know, deciding which where to go, you know, booking the cab, taking the ride, you know, making the payment, and giving a rating, all this is one transaction. So this is what we call transaction data. When millions of people are interacting with the system, they're all transaction data. IoT data is very different. IoT data is like a heartbeat of the system. It is collected all the time. It is continuously updated, and you know, from all the sensors. So for example, same Ola, how does it know where all the cabs are in the city at all times? And what is their status? Are they free? Are they not free? So what do? We basically bring in, you know, a ping every 6 seconds. Every cab sends a ping to Ola that says, this is my location, this is my cab ID, and you know, this is my status. And that data, which is coming from hundreds of thousands of cabs in a city, is collected all the time. And now, you know, that becomes your IoT data. So IoT data is you know, 100x more than your traditional transaction data. And that is kind of the new way of thinking about data, which is data collected not for because somebody triggered something, but it is collected all the time for no reason, just in case I need it, right? And satellite data is IoT data, all your, you know, defense data that is coming all the time, all the monitoring surveillance that we do is all IoT data, which is coming all the time. So the idea of data has evolved from an Excel spreadsheet of rows and columns to where we are today. The idea of interfaces has evolved, and you must have seen your own interfaces in different parts of the world. But the idea is, earlier we used to have a very, you know, intense visual menu driven click and swipe kind of an interface, and we all got used to it because of the smartphones and the beautiful apps that we use. But you know, humans don't talk to each other in such a complicated way. We use conversations, and you know, conversational computing is now picking up. Imagine in the future you can speak to your warships and say, hey, you know, turn left, or you know, slow down, or whatever, and it understands the command and it executes the command. So you don't have to do a lot of physical work. And same thing in airplanes, in cars, in TVs at home, and all that. So can we have a conversational system with our devices, with our you know, things that we do? And who wants to type? Can we have a speech-driven system? So the idea of interfaces is evolving. We're going from a very touch-driven to conversational to speech-driven conversation system, interfaces, right? So more natural interfaces. The way humans talk to each other, can we talk to machines the same way? That is the general idea. So our technology, all aspects of technology are evolving. And that is the message that, you know, the pace of evolution is very high, and we have to keep up with that pace to stay ahead of the game. Now, within AI, within technology, AI is a type of technology. And I just want to give you a perspective on how to think about AI as a field that needs to be adopted at this point with a sense of urgency. So if you think about any country, any startup, any organization, you know, it goes through four stages of evolution. The first stage is what we call the infrastructure stage, where you build your core infrastructure, you build your equipment, you build your sensors, you build your apps, put them all together, and it starts to work. The second comes the automation evolution, which says, hey, we cannot scale this without proper automation. We need a lot of automation because, you know, the system is too complex for us to do manually. And the only way we get scale is through automation. The next thing we do is then we become a data civilization. Because we are doing automation, now we are collecting data left, right, and center. And, you know, early days, we were collecting data for two reasons. One was, if something goes wrong, I need to have data to tell me, you know, what happened, like a black box in a aeroplane crash, right? So it was more about retrospective analysis and analyzing the data, looking at the logs and saying what went wrong. So that was one reason why we collected data. The second reason why we collected data was to summarize the data and say, you know, what is the, you know, Tableau report or a BI report that says how many products of this type were sold in this market in this season, that kind of a reporting. So there were two reasons why we started collecting data. And then somebody realized that, look, our systems of automation that we have built have been programmed once and they're not improving over time, right? They're not learning. And then that realization led to the birth of AI. And now every company, every country, every organization is thinking that now that we are a data-rich organization, how do we become an AI-first organization? From a data-rich to an AI-first organization. So talking about on my own journey, I worked at Google and Ola and Jio. All these companies have become very data-rich companies now. And they're now trying to see what can we do with this data to make it make our decision processes better and better. Okay? So that is a very important perspective. And we all have to think, where are we on this journey? If we are a data-rich organization, when are we going to move to a AI-first organization? And what does it mean? So I'm going to share a template of how do we do this transition from a data-rich to an AI-first organization. The idea of AI itself is evolving, and you know there are four stages to AI adoption. And when I go to a lot of companies, they say, look, you know, we are an AI company. We already generate 2,000 reports every day. And when I hear that, I wonder, what does it mean, right? How do you deal with 2,000 reports? So you have millions of records. You have summarized them into 2,000 reports. And people have to look at those reports and make sense of the reports and then make a decision about what to do next. So that is one level of AI, which is still at a very basic level. I call it a business intelligence level, which is really reporting what has happened in the past. But that is not intelligence, that is just summarization. Right? Next stage of AI adoption is predicting the future and not just reporting the past. So how do we use different techniques to actually predict what is about to happen? I don't want to know what has happened in the past. I want to know what is about to happen. Right? So if I do this, what will happen? If I do that, what will happen? Based on all the sensor data, seeing, can I understand what is about to happen? Can I predict the future and not just observe the past? So that is the next generation of AI. Now, you know, so for example, here you can predict whether, you know, a farmer is going to have a bad crop or not, whether a person is going to have a heart attack or not based on Fitbit data, whether a student is going to fail in an exam or not, right? Or in your world, you can think about predictions of all kinds. So once we know how to predict, and we only know how to predict and cannot do anything about it, that is not also good enough. So you can say, hey, these customers are about to churn from your business. But if you cannot say what to do about it, then it's a useless exercise. So the next stage of AI is what I call creating a new future. Because you have predicted something, can you now act knowing about the prediction, right? And that is about creating a future. So to me, data science is really a layer of actions over a layer of predictions. So if you are able to sense the data, make predictions, and act on those predictions, then you are a complete sort of an AI data science driven organization. And you know, this is also a relationship between science and technology. If you think of science, science is all about learning the causal behavior between cause and effect, right? Gravity, laws of motion, laws of dynamics, aerodynamics, and all that. So this is about causality, learning causality. Learning causality is not enough. Using causality to do something about it, build aeroplanes, you know, build cars, because you know the laws of gravity and laws of heat and thermodynamics. Can we use them to build something? And that is the transition from science to engineering. Similarly, there is a transition from machine learning to data science, right? And that transition is happening. And the last one where I really differentiate between all these four areas, which is AI is, is a very broadly used term, but to me, AI is about exploring all possible futures and then making the current decision. This is a very important aspect that AI plays, which is, in a simple example, like playing game of chess, if you are in the current board position and if you can explore all possible futures, 5 moves ahead, 3 moves ahead, and then play your current move, that is what strategic thinking is, and that is what AI can help us do. Right? So it's not about the current decision, but it is about the sequence of decisions that we can make the whole thing better. So these are the four stages of kind of an AI transformation in any organization, right? Whether it is telecom, whether it is retail, whether it is wherever we are, these are the four stages, and we need to see where we are and what are we doing. What are the things we can predict? Are we predicting them accurately? Based on that, are we acting on them well and optimally? And then are we just acting tactically, or can we act strategically? And that is how we will go through these four stages. Now, if I have to explain to somebody what AI has done, really, if you think about what AI does, it helps us make what we call better decisions. Right? So the idea is we are making decisions all the time. Decisions are becoming better and better. So I'm going to talk about what better decisions mean. So the first idea of better decisions is what I call, from a broadcast set of decisions to a personal decision. So today, if I show a TV ad, everybody sees it is a broadcast decision. Our education system, one textbook, everybody reads it is a broadcast decision, right? How can we make it personalized? Can I make personalized healthcare? Can I make personalized farming? Can I make personalized education? Right? So if we can personalize our, Netflix and Amazon pages, can we not personalize our education and our care systems, right? So personalization is about knowing enough about each entity and making decisions, knowing enough about that entity, not a generic decision, right? So that is a very important area. Second is, how do we go from batch to real-time decisions? So, we can make batch decisions about send a Sunday circular to everybody in the city about ads versus real-time decisions that say, for example, if a customer bought a printer, I know that one month later is going to need a cartridge or a paper stack. So how do I make decisions about things on the trigger, event-based decisions, and not calendar-based decisions, right? So that is a very important transition that is possible with AI and machine learning. The third thing is, how do we not make reactive decisions? Aray ho gaya, ab kya kare, right? In something like that, can I say, because I can predict, can I be proactive? Can I prevent a heart attack from happening because I can predict it? Can I prevent or prepare for a part failure before it happens? Can I prepare for a crop failure before it happens? Right. So because we are able to predict, we can be proactive in our decisions and not reactive in our decisions. And the last thing is, can we not be just tactical in our decisions? Just optimize the current functions, but optimize them. So for example, if a farmer wants to grow a crop and make the most out of it in this crop cycle, he will put a lot of fertilizers and pesticides on it. But that is a tactical optimization. But what he did in the process was he destroyed his soil for the future. And that is a loss in the strategic decision. So how do you balance tactical and strategic decision making is a very important aspect that we need to think about. So the AI data science, what is our success metric is, if we are able to go from broadcast, batch, reactive, tactical decisions to personalized, real-time, proactive, strategic decisions, in any domain. That is what we need to get to. All right. So now let me quickly go through some diverse frameworks in AI before we talk about the our frameworks. Right. So you know, obviously AI is evolving at a very fast pace, especially in the last 10 years, it has picked up quite exponentially. So now we cannot just collect data, but we can draw very deep insights in the data. We don't have to just code up the rules. We can actually learn the rules, because coding up the rules is something that an expert can do. And an expert can only look at four or five variables at a time and can only think about so much. But the real world is a lot more than what an expert can think about. And, you know, with the data, we can actually merge the two things, the knowledge of the expert with the data coming from the ground. How do we merge them to create the next generation models is now possible. Right? How do we not just hear what we are, you know, capturing in our sound devices, but can actually listen to what it is saying? You know, can we understand what our speech systems are saying? Right? So today in telecom, for example, you know, you pick up a phone on one side, you call the other person. Our devices and our telecom network does not understand the speech. It only transmits the speech audio. But if it can understand the speech, imagine what is possible. Looking at to seeing, right? If you look at our cameras and our, you know, remote sensing cameras or other such sensors, collecting data, you know, at a pixel level, at a video level, and storing it and letting some human actually interpret that, versus if a machine can do the interpretation and say, who is there, you know, what activities are going on, is it right or wrong, is it making sense or not, is it an outlier or not, how do we go from looking to seeing and understanding what you're seeing, right? How do we go from reading to understanding? If you know, look at Google search 20 years ago, it was really all about crawling the web and converting every document from a keyword of a word to a document mapping. But now Google actually understands the documents. It says, oh, this document is about sports. This document is about this person. This document is about this sentiment, right? So we understand the document. We don't just collect and store them and index them. And, you know, this is very important from a Navy perspective also. How do we think about learning the moves and not just knowing the rules of the game? You know, if I just program a system with the rules of chess and say, now you are a chess grandmaster, is not enough. It should be able to play a lot of games and, you know, build a lot of strategies on its own, learn a lot of strategies on its own. And, you know, here I just want to allude, you know, when I was in the U.S., I worked with the Office of Naval Research in the U.S., where we worked on something called a multi-agent system that would simulate a scenario for the Navy, like, you know, a terrorist attack by multiple boats on a large ship. And we would figure out what would be the best strategy by simulating the scenario, you know, doing multiple data collection on it and different actions and different policies and learning from that data what is the most optimal strategy. So learning strategies in a single agent or a multi-agent system is one of the areas that I think we should look at very carefully, especially in the naval scenario. And how can we build simulators and how can we learn them, use them to learn strategies? And this is what is happening now in, you know, how Google has learned how to play the best chess game or the Go game is because they're able to play millions of games with each other, like a champion challenger mode. And therefore, they're able to do this. So how do we learn strategies and evolve strategies? So all these building blocks are ready. All these capabilities are ready to a four-year-old level now. And we are ready to use them to the next level. And that is the next promise. So quick examples on some of these, right? So some of these are capabilities in AI. So one of them is clustering, right? Grouping similar things together and saying this group of customers buy this kind of product, this group of customers buy this kind of product. Hello? Yeah? Right. And then, you know, how do we think about grouping similar customers together and then, you know, doing the right thing? So for example, here, instead of sending all coupons to all customers, can we, hello? Yes? Yes? Later. So clustering, you know, gives us a way to group similar things together and all that. And now we can use this to make very strategic and tactical decisions. Like, for example, instead of sending all coupons to all customers, write coupons to the right customer. Right? Clustering is a very important area. The next important area in machine learning is what we call outlier detection. So here, you know, it is used in very interesting scenarios like credit card fraud detection or cybersecurity, where we want to know what are normal behaviors in a system, right? What is the normal behavior of transaction? What is the normal behavior in a cloud environment? And how do we actually, you know, detect an abnormal behavior and instead of a normal behavior? So outlier detection is used in a lot of terrorism and defense and other such scenarios where you're looking for these outliers all the time, right? Another area in AI machine learning is about interpretation, interpreting any complex data, whether it is vision data or genomics data or time series data or text data. How do we deeply interpret the data and say, you know, in this image, what do I see? In that time series data, how do you map it to the activities that you are doing? In this, sentiment analysis example, you know, how do we say what is the entity, which aspect of the entity are we talking about, and are we positive or negative about that aspect, right? So how do we interpret the data, and how do we do deep interpretation of the data that is coming? Now imagine this in your hyperspectral sensors or your, you know, drone-based sensors or any of the sensors that we have, and how do we interpret them better and better and more accurately? Prediction is very important area. Prediction is different than interpretation. Interpretation is predicting the complex data in the now. Prediction is predicting something in the future. Right? Will a customer churn my system? Will this part fail in the future? And this part failure is a very important area, especially when we are dealing with complex equipments and, you know, ships and refineries and things like that. We need to know, you know, what is the efficiency with which my, you know, every part in my every chip is working, and is it about to fail or is it going well, right? Part failure prediction is a very important area that we can do. So the idea there is we look at our, you know, past data and we look at a future event and try to see if there are indicators in the past data about the future event. You know, predicting heart attack, if you will, from my Fitbit data is an example of that. Predicting the whether, you know, your creditworthiness given your past, you know, transaction data. So all this is prediction problems. Then we have a lot of pattern recognition problems. There are a lot of patterns in the data. Data is full of grammar and beautiful patterns. And can we detect those patterns? Can we understand those patterns? So these are patterns like, you know, set of keywords that co-occur together in movies. And this was discovered by mining a lot of IMDb data. And, you know, the system doesn't understand English, but it can say that these keywords are similar, those keywords are similar. Right? We have a lot of recommendation systems that we can build, whether we want to recommend a coupon or a movie or a job or a next topic to learn to a student. These are all recommendation systems. Then we have reasoning system. And this is one of the areas that I think we should look at, which is how do we think about of decisions we want to make to get a certain outcome. Right? Instead of making one decision. So how do we build a chatbot is an example. How do we solve a math problem is a sequence of decisions. How do we learn to play a game of chess or Go is a sequence of decisions. Right? So how do we learn reasoning as a new paradigm that we want to build into our other paradigms? Right? So we have done interpretation, we have done outlier detection, we have done clustering, but the next level thinking is reasoning. And how do we do reasoning on top of all the data? And then, you know, there are newer framework reinforcement learning where we can say, look, you know, this was the state of the system. These were the actions we took. And, you know, 50% of the time we were right, 50% of the time we were wrong. Can we learn from those and continue to improve our system? Right? And so reinforcement learning is another new paradigm. So this reasoning and reinforcement learning are the next generation paradigms that are yet to be adopted at mass scale. But this is where AI is, and we have cracked some of the early algorithms, but now we are working on how do we adopt these new intelligence into our systems. And then we all understand deep learning and all that, which is using a lot of complex data. So this was the general idea around why there are so many techniques and tools for different kinds in AI, right? And you know, often we go and say, oh, I want to learn AI, I want to take some courses. You are like mesmerized by the 200 types of things you want to learn. And now I want to present to you a template of AI, right? How do you think about AI, not as a collection of tools and techniques, but in a top-down fashion? And how do you institutionalize AI into any system? So what is the general architecture of AI, if you right? So in my mind, after doing this for 20 years, I realized it's a very simple architecture. Every AI system is a very simple architecture. It's what I call a stimulus-response learning system. So, you know, we all collect stimulus data all the time, right? All our sensors data, census data, and other such data is stimulus data. So let me take a couple of examples. So let's say you go to a doctor and you say, hey, I have these symptoms, and he says, okay, take those tests, and you take the test. So the symptoms and the tests are your stimulus data, right? So that is the first thing that we do. So we collect a lot of stimulus data. Now, the first act of creativity in data science is to think about the state of the system. What is the state of health of a person? What is the state of, you know, knowledge of a student? What is the state of the crop? What is the state of my ship? What is the state of my fleet? What is the state of the country's defense strategy? So the state thinking is very important. And all the data we collect from one side, from stimulus data, all kinds of sensors data, all kinds of intelligence reports, are coming in, and we need to think about how to define the state vector of everything, right? So, for example, in healthcare, I can define your cardiac health score, your emotional health score, your gastric health score, your, you know, skin health score, whatever it is, right? And I can say 20 numbers that really semantically and deeply define the state of this entity. The entity could be anything, a ship, for example. How do I define the state of a ship? And you can think of it from all directions, right? Using that definition, using domain expert knowledge, then we can work backward and say, in order for me to define the state, how do I define, you know, think of all the data I'm collecting, and how do I interpret that data into the state vector of the entity? So this is the first act of creativity in AI, which is stimulus to state. Now, once you go from stimulus to state, the next thing we need to do is, if you are in this state, what action should I do? And that is the second part of AI. We talked about machine learning and data science, right? You know, causality and actions. So the second part is, how do you define the state, and then how do you optimize your actions given that you are in a certain state?
Okay, I have spoken to Dr. Shailesh. He's online on the phone with me, and some of the questions, because there is some connectivity issue and he is unable to join the webinar, but still I would like to continue with the questioning answer sessions. So if there is any question, please type in your question and I will ask the speaker, and he will then answer me on phone, and then I will be able to speak to you. I will share you the his answer. Sir, we have a question from Mr. Vivek Srivastav from NHTL in DRDO. But please give your opinion on the availability of indigenous plug-and-play smart sensors for IoT applications for AI in naval or defense domain.
For example, have a lot of advancement in this area that we can look at some of those relationships with them. But need a lot of advanced sensors, and off the top of my head, I don't know, but I can, you know, we can do some research and find out what kind of sensors are available and what are the sensors that are needed. If you have a sensor, a set of requirements that, you know, are there, I think we can put it in front of our ministries and industrialists, and we can actually start working on some of those sensors also, you know, all the research labs and everything.
Okay. Sir mentioned about spectral sensor, hyperspectral sensor, and oceanic sensor. I hope it answered the question. Sir, we have one more question from Commander Prateek Kalra. That as we understand that, the inevitable adoption of AI in every field of operations today, and at the same time, AI results are statistical. what do you think would be the best strategy to gain confidence at organization leadership?
A very good question. So today there is something called explainable AI, right? Which not only tells you what the decision is, but also why it made that decision, right? Because of which variables it is saying so. And I think if we incorporate, you know, explainability into our machine learning models and statistical models, that will build a lot of trust in the system that, you know, this is what an expert would have said. This is the reason why an expert would have said so, and therefore the machines are saying the same thing, and they are saying it for the same reasons. So explainable AI is the next layer of AI on top of predictions, and I think with that, a lot of trust will be built in the AI systems, and that is where we should look at explainability of AI models.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I hope it answered Commander Pratik Kalra's question. And I would like to formally thank you, sir. I would like to express my sincere gratitude for this informative session. The topics such as evolution of data, Internet of Things, evolution of interface, evolution of AI, and various perspectives about AI were covered in a very effective manner. The correlations brought out during the session between data and insights, rules and models, moves and strategies for building an AI model were really fascinating. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us today.